Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on the sportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Sun First Solar, known for delivering solar excellence since 1984 and recently voted best solar company in Marin County. We're also brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco, offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Coming up, we'll talk to Bruce McGowan from KCBS in San Francisco. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. Bruce, how are you? What's going on? How are you doing going through all this coronavirus stuff? Are you hanging in there?
Oh, yeah. I got in a little surf action yesterday, but now we're told that all the beaches, all the open space where I like to hike, everything has been shut down because all of these people from the East Bay and San Francisco came over and crowded our areas, and we're not practicing the safe staying away from each other 6 feet. And so the park rangers got all upset, and they went to the county health, and the county health shut everything down, literally. I mean, we have all this national recreation area. We have national parks. We have state parks. We have water district lands. We got open space land, all shut down. I can't go anywhere. I'm stuck in a house. It's driving me nuts.
No, it really is. Yeah, it's driving everybody crazy. But one good thing is that you could work from home, and that's the thing. KCBS has been a great resource for people as far as the news, and to be able to work from home for KCBS, I would think that's a nice advantage, and I would think that the ratings are pretty high for KCBS right now.
Oh, yeah, no question. KCBS has been doing a great job. I've been listening to their updates throughout the last week, and you get more local information there than you're going to get anywhere on any, immediately, in terms of getting it immediately, than you're going to get on any other platform or any other media outlet. So I feel very proud to be a part of it. And, what we're doing at KCBS with sports, I mean, we're just, kind of there to sort of provide a little relief, but there's not really a whole lot to talk about, nothing really going on. So we have to kind of be creative. We're going to do short updates and just kind of keep it simple and let the news folks kind of, do what they do. And hopefully this virus mess will abate in the next couple of weeks, and we'll be able to get back to business as usual. But I'm not real optimistic in that department, Joe.
Well, I was thinking that the only sports news that really has come out in the last week has been NFL news. Everything else is bad news.
Yeah.
Something being suspended or canceled, an event being canceled or suspended. So outside of Tom Brady going to the Buccaneers or DeForest Buckner getting traded to the Colts, outside of that, I mean, I would think that it's pretty hard to come up with good sports stories right now.
It is. I mean, you have to be creative. One of the things I think we might try to do is do a little archiving, go back into time and find either, look at something that happened on this date in sports history. That might be interesting. Tell a little story for a minute, or maybe do just, a sports memory. I've been able to cover a lot of big sports events over the last 40 some odd years, and, maybe I could lend a little personal aside to it. I'm not sure how we're going to do this. It's kind of interesting and fun. Doing it from your house is one thing. That's something I've never done. And coming up with some unusual ideas takes a little creative effort. But, overall, I think this is going to be fairly easy. But we do have to be, we can't just sit there and say, well, there's nothing going on. Tom Brady signed. That's about the only news. And there are all sorts of little stories going on. And you just have to kind of, go to websites and come up with your own ideas, and so that's what we'll do. You know, we got no choice.
Yeah, I heard Steve Bitker earlier today, one of your colleagues over there at KCBS, and he was playing some play-by-play calls, at least he played one, of Josh Lewin, who's now one of the Red Sox announcers, and he was describing eating ice cream. You know, he's doing some play-by-play. Joe Buck has done something at home, too. I think he was doing some play-by-play of his kid crying. I mean, some of these sportscasters are getting bored now.
I think we are, Joe. I don't know what you've been doing with your sports virus. How you been? What have you been doing? How have you been managing to get through this thing? What have you been talking about?
Well, last week we had Jeremy Affeld on, and I definitely encourage people to go back and listen to that. Click on the link on thesportsvirus.com. Affeld was great. Told a lot of stories from the World Series years. You know what I did yesterday, Bruce? I watched Game 6 and Game 7 of the 1986 World Series on YouTube, and I couldn't have been more entertained. I mean, those were great games, and I didn't remember every detail. So I watched the entire game of each game, and it was so much fun. It was fun.
Can I tell you a little story about that? My own personal experience with that series, and if those of you younger viewers and listeners don't remember, that was the year that the Mets came back from a 3-2 deficit and won the last two games in New York, and people forget there was a rainout between Game 6 and Game 7. I have a friend of mine who lives in New York who's a big Yankee fan, and I was back visiting him, and we were up in the New Hampshire, Vermont area hiking around Mount Washington. This is in October of 1986, and the night of the sixth game, we were standing in a hotel, we're watching the game, you know. He was rooting for the Yankees. I was rooting for the, who was it?
No, Mets.
The Mets.
Mets,
sorry.
Red Sox.
Mets.
Yeah.
He was rooting for the Mets. And I was, again, I'm getting confused here. And I was rooting for the Red Sox, you know, just because Boston hadn't been to a World Series and won it all since, what was it, 1917. So when Mookie Wilson ground ball went right through the legs of Bill Buckner to win the game, he gets down on his knees and his feet are up there, his hands are up in the air, he's going, yeah, yeah, yeah. And next door, there was a bunch of young guys watching television also. They started banging on the walls, and you could hear furniture breaking and people screaming obscenities. And the manager of the hotel came in and threw them out. Well, so two nights later, we're in Providence, Rhode Island. We decide, you know, go out, get a bite to eat. We go to the sports bar, and there's only eight guys at the sports bar, and they're all sitting looking real gloomily at the TVs that are up in the corner. And I said, well, you guys have a chance to win the World Series tonight. And they all looked at me, two or three of them looked at me and said, it's not going to happen. They're not going to win. And you'll remember in that game, I think the Red Sox took a 2-0 lead early.
3-0.
Ray Knight hit. Yeah, 3-0 lead. And Ray Knight hit the big home run late in the game. And all these guys, you know, they didn't get upset. They just said, we told you.
We'll have more with Bruce McGowan from KCBS in San Francisco right after this. Jones goes back near the wall, shading the sun, and he dropped it. He lost the ball in the sun. Let's put the sun to good use at home with a SunPower residential solar system. Your SunPower elite dealer, SunFirst Solar, has a wide range of financing options, and they provide the finest customer service from start to finish, regardless of size or scope. SunFirst Solar offers the highest efficiency systems, newest technology, and the best warranty in the world. SunFirst Solar offers the most competitive price while not compromising on quality. This summer, let the sun heat your pool and eliminate your energy bill. Don't drop the ball. Call SunFirst Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870. And get your SunPower solar system today. Well, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is just some of your memories. I mean, you have so many stories to tell about the San Francisco Giants and the years that you covered them for KMBR. And, you know, I have a few as well that we could sort of share together. I think the one player that stands out, and he was recently in the news because he's upset about not getting into the Hall of Fame, and that's Barry Bonds. I don't know if he will get in, but, man, he was quite a character because I think both you and I saw sort of the best and the worst of him. When I was working with SiriusXM, I saw both sides, and I'm sure you did as well.
Oh, yeah. You know, the thing about Barry Bonds is, you know, I traveled a lot with the Giants, and so Bonds was a little easier to deal with because he knew I was not going to, you know, I was one of the regular guys. They say that sometimes familiarity breeds contempt. There's a certain amount of truth to that. But, hey, girls, I think, get back to your they're watching Big on TV. I think that's better for them than to distract us. No, but Bonds, I never had a problem with. The only time I ever had a problem with, you know, our friend Barry Bloom, the sports writer, who now works for Forbes, was doing an interview with him. I think Barry was with MLB.com at the time. And we're down in San Diego or someplace. And Barry was doing an interview. I didn't realize they were doing a one-on-one interview because he was just sitting there chatting with him. And I come over and, you know, sort of tried to get in on the action. And Barry looks at me and goes, "Hey, we're doing an interview. Go away." That's the worst, you know, I ever got treated. I saw him being very, I hate to use the word abrasive, but just dismissive, I guess, a better word to use, towards a number of reporters. And that just, Barry was kind of hot and cold. I think he was just a moody guy. If you remember his dad, Bobby, I got to know Bobby really well when he was coaching. He was Dusty Baker's friend, but he was also kind of a troubled soul. And Barry had a very complicated relationship with him. They actually patched up a lot of their differences when Bobby became the head coach. And it was very moving when Bobby was dying of cancer. You remember Barry was right. I think he was either breaking Hank Aaron's all-time record. He was very close to breaking it. And he hit a home run the day before Bobby showed up to the ballpark, and the day after. And they brought Bobby in. I'll never forget this, Joe. They brought Bobby in on a stretcher because he was, you know, in hospice kind of care, but he wanted to see his son play. And Barry didn't hit a home run that night, but Bobby was in the press box, and I think he was in Willie McCovey's booth upstairs, and they had a shot of him, they propped him up, and he waved, and the crowd went crazy, and Barry Bonds, of course, you know, had tears in his eyes and was talking about it after the game. So that, you know, was one of the great moments, I think, poignant moments, not great moments, but poignant moments regarding Barry Bonds. You know, he was a complicated character. I think Dusty Baker had a difficult time with him sometimes, but Dusty had known him since he was a kid, and Barry was very respectful of Dusty and never gave Dusty into trouble. Different story with Jeff Kent. I know not to digress, but I got a great little story about Jeff Kent.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me go to the clubhouse, and this is before a game, and I'm trying to, you know, hustle up some interviews before I have to do this pregame show, and I'd already gone to the visitor's locker room or clubhouse and get a few interviews. So I go in the Giants clubhouse, and it was always tougher to get interviews with the Giants before the game because they were usually out on the field early, and, you know, they just didn't do that many, and the visitors were always available because they just, you know, they got nothing to do. They're not, you know, they're far away from home, and so they're easy to deal with. So Ken is in the clubhouse all by himself. Everybody else is on the field. I think, oh, this is great. I can get a one-on-one with Jeff Ken. He's got his uniform on, and he's fiddling around in the locker for something. He's got a bat, and he's, you know, got his full uniform on. He's getting ready to head out there. I say, "Hey, Jeff, before you go out for batting practice, you got a few minutes for me, you know?" And he turns around and gives me this little sneer, and he goes, "I don't do the interview, so the game, sir." And I laughed, and I said, "Jeff, you know me. We've known each other 6 years. You know, you don't need to call me, sir. Call me Bruce." He goes, "I call you Bruce?" He says, "I'd rather call you, you know," I won't use the words, but ass, whatever, S-H-I-T-H-E-A-D, and F, you know, all these different things. I said, "Actually, Jeff, Bruce would be just fine." He goes, "I thought so. Now, would you please get away, sir? I got to get out to the field and do some batting practice." That was Jeff Kent. He was a piece of work, that guy. That was a fun team to cover on the field, but off the field, some of the things that went on. And Dusty confided in me once during playoffs in 2002, and I can talk about that. He actually invited me into his room after they had won the division series against Atlanta, in St. Louis, real late at night, and he just, you know, went off on a tangent about all the things he didn't like that were going on. He says, I'm tired of it. This was after 10 years of the Giants. I said, "But Dusty, you guys just won your first playoff series, you know, since 1989. I said, "This is a big deal." He goes, "I don't care. It's all been ruined by all this nonsense." And I thought to myself, he's not going to be around next year. And I made the mistake of telling Ralph Barbieri over breakfast the next day, "That's good. I'm going to use it on my show." And I said, "No, you're not." Because I, you know, Dusty didn't ask me to keep this in confidence, but I know he would not have wanted me to go blabbing it on the air, and I didn't. And Ralph says, "We got an exclusive here." And I said, "Ralph, you know as well as I that certain times you don't betray the trust of people that you're working with." And Dusty was such a good friend of mine, I was not about to do that. I told Dusty years later about that, and he laughed. He says, "Oh, you probably could have used it. I wouldn't have got upset."
We'll have more with Bruce McGowan from KCBS in San Francisco right after this. We all know that solar systems make financial sense and environmental sense. And when it comes to choosing the best installation crew in the business, Sun First Solar should be your first choice. Sun First Solar has provided solar excellence since 1984. They are SunPower Elite Commercial and Elite Residential installers with a reputation for technical excellence, innovative design, fair pricing, excellent customer service, and end-to-end quality and competence. Sun First Solar is a family business devoted to treating their employees, customers, the community, and the environment with respect, and they are devoted to renewable energy and sustainability throughout the Bay Area. There is no roof or project that is too complicated. Sun First has successfully installed solar on Spanish tile roofs, metal roofs, and very steep roofs. They also have extensive experience in solar ground mounts and solar pool heating. Competitive pricing, expert consultation, and the best warranty. Go local and get your SunPower solar system from Sun First Solar today. Call Sun First Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870. A reminder that one of our sponsors, Kane's Tire in San Rafael, remains open during this unfortunate time. They are practicing social distancing while being available to the community by providing tire and brake services to ensure necessary safety to daily driving. So if you need tires, get down to Kane's Tire in San Rafael. They're open regular hours. They can be reached at 415-453-2942. That's 415-453-2942. That whole dynamic between Bonds and Kent, and I think Barry, on a good day, you could talk to him off mic. He would tell stories, and you could talk to him, but he was really reluctant, especially when I was dealing with him during the home run chase, really reluctant to do a one-on-one interview. In fact, I've told the story before about how he promised an interview when I was on Sirius XM. He promised an interview after he broke the record. And then we were led to believe all the way until the day that he broke it, that, you know, that night, that he would be doing the interview the next day. And I went up to him and he said, "I ain't doing no XM radio interview." And when I said, "Why?" And he said, "Oh, because they wouldn't give us, you know, they wouldn't give me a free XM for life." You know, he had wanted free XM for life. And it didn't work out. And then, so that was it.
Like he really needed a free, he really couldn't pay for it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, he just was making an excuse. You know, that's the thing about athletes. Sometimes I hate to sound like an old jaded reporter, but you really, you know, they limit the access to athletes. Now, I won't say which team did this, but I was in a locker room of a team after a game, and I was talking to a player, and a PR guy comes over to me and starts tapping on my shoulder. And I said, "Excuse me, I'm doing an interview with this guy." It wasn't, you know, a one-on-one kind of interview where I had to have it not interrupted, but I was getting some post-game sound. And he goes, "Well, you can't talk to this guy." I said, "Why can't I talk to him?" And the athlete said, "No, that's okay." He goes, "Well, you know, if you want to get an interview, you've got to go in the interview room." And I said, "Well, he's not coming into the interview room." And I got into this whole argument with the guy, and I said, "I'm doing the interview." I did the interview, and he comes up to me afterwards, "You can't do that anymore, you know?" And I said, "Well, you know, that's ridiculous. I'm trying to help you and your team out, and you're limiting access to me. You're doing just the opposite of your job." They get all mad at me. "Don't tell me what my job consists of." I just thought, "Okay, I'm not going to win this battle. So just shut the heck up and go somewhere else." Which is what I did. The next day, the guy comes up to me and apologizes. He said, "I was just having a rough day, and I didn't mean to make you the object of my scorn." And I said, "Ah, boy, I mean, the whole thing was forgotten." But, you know, players are hard, tougher to deal with these days. They just are, you know?
Well, I think also there's so much media attention, so many more media members, and it's a daily game, so you know the daily grind kind of gets to them, and they're human beings. I mean, they're going to be moody, where one day it might be okay to an interview, and then the next day you might run into somebody. I know I did when I was with Sirius XM. I was in that clubhouse a lot more than I am now, and I would have players, you know, not necessarily giants. I'm talking about all different players around Major League Baseball that I would try to talk to, and some of them would just literally yell at me, "No, I'm not doing it." You know, just it was a you know, really a rude awakening to me as to some of the personalities that were out there. But most of the guys are good, and some guys, even when they had a bad reaction, they'd come back over to me and say, "You know, I'm sorry, I was in a bad mood. Yeah. Let's do it now. Let's do the interview." So most guys are pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, the only guy that I really had problems with, Joe, over the years was Kirk Gibson, and he had problems with everybody, especially radio people. And I'll never forget, I was doing an interview with Chet Lemon, great guy. This is back in '84. I believe, when the Tigers won the World Series. It might have been even earlier. Gibson was kind of unknown at that time. He might have been a rookie, might have been in his second year. It was before he came up with all those postseason heroics with the Tigers and later with the Dodgers. Anyway, I'm interviewing Cat Lemon in an almost empty White Sox clubhouse. Most of the guys were out on the field stretching, and he happened to be there and said he'd do the interview. Just a sweetheart of a guy. So halfway through the interview, all of a sudden across the room, this guy with his, he looks like he's been in the shower, his hair's going every which way, you know, he's got this wild eyes, and 5 o'clock Saturday, he screams, "What the hell are you doing? Go out of this locker room." I don't know who he was. I didn't know if he was talking to me, and apparently he was talking to me. And then he disappeared, and I said, "Chet, who the—" I stopped the tape recorder. I said, "Chet, who the heck was that?" He goes, "Oh, that's Kirk Gibson. He's just one of our—he's one of our younger players. He's one of the little types. Don't pay any attention to him." So after the game that day, Gibson had gotten the game-winning hit, and there's a whole bunch of reporters around him. He's a very bright guy. So I stick my microphone in the group, and he like swats it away. You know, "Hey, get that thing out of my face! Get it out of my face!" You know, he used the foul language. And from that point on, every time the Tigers would come to town, every time I talked to him, he goes, "I'm not talking to you, you son of a," you know. And then later, he is playing with the Dodgers, and I go to him, remember the home run he hit? And he's in the clubhouse, and I didn't go to the interview room to get him. I wanted to get him in the clubhouse because I wanted to ask him two or three questions. And he couldn't have been nicer. And then he calls me one time, and I'm down in Atlanta with the Giants, and I'm on the bus going to the ballpark for game 5. And I had the producer calling my cell phone, "Hey, this is so-and-so for Kirk Gibson's radio show." And I didn't know I had a radio show. This was after he retired. He said, "Kirk wants to have you on to do an interview." And Kirk knew me from Adam. He just knew, you know, his producer knew that I was covering the Giants. So we do the interview, and Kirk's asking all these good questions. Very smart guy. And then at the end of the interview, I said, "Kirk, you don't remember this, but you used to treat me like I was some kind of a pariah. And you yelled at me and did all these things. So I think it's only appropriate that when you say goodbye to me, just say, 'Get the hell out of here.'" He laughs and goes, "Get the hell out of here."
That's great. Yeah, no, you should have said to him was, "In a season that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened." If you did it like Vin Scully. Yeah, the 88 home run.
You know who had the best call of that, though? Wasn't Jack Buck. Wasn't Vin Scully. It was Bill King. If you listen,
I don't know if I've heard that.
Oh, it's great. You know what he says? He goes, "Eckersley, the last pitch you might remember that Eckersley threw that Gibson hit was a backdoor slider, which, you know, breaks in on the hitter and down. And that was Eckersley's money pitch, and he hadn't thrown it." So King is, you know, almost prescient. He says, "Eckersley has not gone to that backdoor slider. Here it comes. High ball. Deep right field. Gone. The Dodgers have won it." You wouldn't have known that he was broadcasting for the A's. He made it sound so dramatic.
Wow.
So exciting. Bill King, I remember, did that for the Franco Harris catch. I was taping that while watching it on TV. I was a 20-year-old student at the University of Denver, and Bill's call was just, you know, it was wonderful. I mean, he had that ability to transcend. He was a fan, but he wasn't a homer. You know, he got excited when the home team won, but when the visiting team did something, or his, you know, the opposite team did something that was special, he would really, you know, make it exciting. I love Bill King for that reason, among others. And not too many announcers do that, unfortunately, today. You listen to the guy in St. Louis, Mike Shannon. I was listening to the playoffs this year. There's a fly ball out there. I feel that ball's going to go up into the corner, into the gap, and two runs are going to score. And the Astros is just taking the lead. You know, and I was thinking, come on. Or Ed Farmer, I go, fly ball, deep left field, it's gone, home run. Tigers lead 12-2.
one of the big differences too, Bruce, is that in those days that you're talking about, you know, the Bill King days, or even what I was talking about with Vin Scully in the 1986 World Series, is the ability to lay out and let the pictures tell the story, or even on the radio, let the audio tell the story. When the Mets won that game 6, when Knight scored, and Vin Scully said, "Here comes Knight," and the Mets win it, he doesn't say anything again for like about a minute and a half. I mean, he just let the pictures tell the story.
In television, you don't need to do that. Radio, you do. I mean, you don't have to fill all the time. You can let the crowd make some noise. But radio, you have to create the word pictures. All you have is your voice and your account of things. And that's one of the reasons Bill told me years ago. He said, "I hate television because I'm kind of not really necessary. They could have a broadcast without me," which they did that, Joe, back in the early 80s. They had a an entire broadcast on television. They experimented with no announcers, and between innings, I think it was Greg Gumbel came on, or Brian Gumbel came on and explained what was going on. They never did another one, but it was interesting. You really didn't need the announcers other than just, you know, to give you stats, because you could see everything that was going on. Radio is a different story. That's why I think that's one of the reasons why you and I love radio so much, is that we get to tell stories and kind of, you know, it's an egotistical thing, let's face it, but it's fun in that respect. You really have to be, you have to be on your toes, and you have to, you know, think quickly. Television, well, you know, the best announcers to me are on the radio. They don't get paid as well as the TV guys. They don't get as much recognition, but they're still the best in the business.
All right, before we finish up, just real quick on this season's Giants, if there is a baseball season, which I really hope we get it underway at some point. But, wow, what a big change from Bruce Bochy to Gabe Kapler. You know it's going to be completely different, a lot more analytics, a lot more, I think, micromanaging from what I think, you know, just from seeing what happened. And, you know, Bruce, I started a little bit of a firestorm when I tweeted out that interview that John Miller and Sean Estes were doing during the game with Gabe Kapler, and he just kind of took his headset off. He was polite about it, but he took his headset off saying, hey, I got to go, guys. I got to set my defense. And I just thought that was wrong to cut off an interview in the middle of it like that. So I sent out a tweet. It, you know, it got a little bit of attention. So I'm not saying that I dislike Gabe Kapler. I think he seems like he'll be a good manager, but I think he's going to have to loosen up a little bit. He just seems like he's pretty tight. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, my impression of him as a player, and I only dealt with him a few times as a player and as manager, is that he's pretty loose. A lot of the criticism I've heard is that he allowed the Phillies to kind of have, you know, let the players do whatever they wanted. There was really no discipline, no feeling that, you know, he was in charge. I think that might have been partially due to the fact that he was the former player and felt that the players should, you know, police themselves. I think you got to give the guy years where you make a judgment on how good of a manager he is, because he hasn't been given much of a good hand to work with. I mean, the Giants are a shadow of what they have been, and their minor league system isn't really ready to kick in yet. They've got some good players, so he's not going to have as much to deal with, or as much, you know, to work with as he had in Philly. And the big problem, from what I hear in Philadelphia, this is from a few friends of mine who cover the Phillies, is that, you know, he didn't have the pitching that he needed. They had enough hitting, but they didn't have enough pitching. And also the players, it's not like they didn't like him, but they just didn't respect him a lot. So hopefully he learned something. He is an interesting guy. I've never heard of a manager who is such a, you know, bodybuilding. I mean, if you see this guy, he looks like he's, you know, Charles Atlas or something. Nice guy, though. You know, very, very bright. His parents worked in the civil rights movement. They were lawyers. He's well-read. He understands baseball history. I just don't know if he's going to make a good manager or not. Seems like a nice guy, though. I don't know.
Yeah, and maybe he was just trying to compensate a little bit for what he had going on in Philly. Like you said, maybe he was a little too loose there, so he wants to be a little tighter. He's doing that interview. And, you know, he felt like, hey, I got to be on top of things here a little bit more, especially early on. I mean, it's hard when you take on a new job like that, and there's a lot of pressure and stress, and you're just, you know, not really familiar with the surroundings. You want to impress everybody right away. So you know that he's been put in kind of a difficult position right off the bat, especially with a roster. Like you said, I mean, there's not a lot there. It's a lot of younger players, and this team is going to have to rebuild for a while.
No question. And I think one of the things that's going to help him a little bit, as I mentioned, I think people are going to give him a little rope, because this team has not been good for a couple of years, and on paper they're worse than they have been, losing Bumgarner, having guys like Posey and Crawford and Longoria and Belt, you know, into their 30s. Their outfield is not set. The biggest name they brought in was Wilmer Flores, who's a good player, but nothing, you know, that's going to knock your socks off. The bullpen is a big question mark. You know, can Mike Yastrzemski, who had a great year last year as a 28, 29-year-old rookie, duplicate what he did? I mean, there's a lot of questions, and they're not supposed to do a whole lot. So hopefully with the expectations being low, you know, he'll be given some slack. But as far as the Giants are concerned, you know, the Giants are outside of the Dodgers. I mean, who is really very good in that division? With a little luck, if they get a, you know, career years out of some people that haven't done a whole lot, some of these rookies kick in and Alex Dickerson stays healthy, they might actually be able to finish as high as second. I'm not saying they will, but, you know, stranger things have happened, Joe. We've seen it.
Yeah. Well, Madison Bumgarner is going to be in a Diamondbacks uniform. That's a strange
thing.
I
didn't like that. I didn't like that move at all. And I understand it, because the Giants are moving ahead. And I understand Bumgarner wanted to play for a contender because Arizona looks good. But you build around a guy like Bumgarner.
Thanks a lot for coming on. We really appreciate it. And we'll do more of this. Hopefully it'll be a baseball season and we'll be able to actually talk about some real baseball.
There you go. All right, Joe. Thanks, man.
That's Bruce McGowan from KCBS in San Francisco. We're going to continue talking about the Giants this week with Ray Woodson. He will join us regularly here on Inside China Basin. We'll have a conversation with him on Tuesday. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.